broadcasting live from the RNR studios in Las Vegas, Nevada. It's the premier destination for an inside look into the Las Vegas Raiders. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, presented by Tequila Embajador.
It's certainly the hope. We'll listen to the authorities on that and the medical community. Obviously, everybody wants to get back to live events, both in Las Vegas and around the world. And as soon as we're given the go-ahead, our plan is to hopefully open the place up and pack it and bring people to town and have it be the economic stimulus that everybody thought it was going to be.
That was Raiders President and CEO Mark Verdane speaking over the weekend at an event that the Raiders put together in conjunction with MGM Grand to try to get some food to some people who need it. Keep in mind, people are still trying to crawl out from under the devastation of this pandemic and what it's meant in terms of jobs and livelihoods. We're still feeling it. People are still feeling it. And I think that that's the thing that when Sam Gordon, our good friend from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, was just on, he was talking about what the Strip looked like almost like this time last year, basically. It was devastating to drive down the Strip, a place that's always bustling. I mean, there's no town that's 24/7 like Las Vegas. It's just up and running like constantly. And I would take my kids down there just to drive up and down the Strip and to see what it looked like when we were going through the worst of it. And it was literally a ghost town. And all I kept thinking about, and I would remind my kids about this, you see all these beautiful buildings and the hotels and it all looks fun, but always keep in mind and always remember that what that really represents, and aside from the fun and the glamour and a good meal, a good show, going to a good concert, those are jobs. All these hotels, all these restaurants, all these venues, Allegiant Stadium, at the end of the day, such a big part of all of this is the jobs and livelihoods that it creates. And, you start talking about what that means for the local economy and the state's economy and for everybody's well-being, and it's endless. And like I said, people are still dealing with the effects of being furloughed and losing their jobs and now just getting back on their feet. Some people lost their jobs, they haven't gotten their jobs back. Mark Bedane and MGM and the Raiders, put together an event this weekend to get food to people who really need it. And as part of that, the media was out there talking to Bill Hornbuckle from MGM and Mark Bedane about getting Allegiant Stadium to a point where it can open its doors to 100% capacity. And we're all waiting for that day. And it means so much more than just, it'll get to this point where it's a stadium that becomes an advantage for the Raiders. And I've been to places where that is absolutely the case. You go to Seattle, you go to New Orleans, you go to some of these stadiums where the fans are daunting. I mean, they play such a role in how it affects the opposing team, how it lifts the home team. And I have a feeling just being in Allegiant Stadium last year and hearing the acoustics, and keep in mind there was music being played at times, and I want to say that they piped in a little bit of fan noise, but you can tell walking into that stadium, into that venue, that if there was a full house and they were, ripping and roaring, that it's going to be a deafening type sound in there. The way it was built, and I'm no engineer or anything like that, so I don't know exactly if they did this with that element in mind. I suspect that they did in order to make sure that, when people are cheering and screaming and yelling, that there's going to be an optimal containment of the sound so that it has an effect on the game and the opposing team. You want that. That's part of your home field advantage, and I think that Allegiant Stadium is going to be that for the Raiders. Like, you just feel it. You can just feel like it's going to get loud in here, and more so than an open air stadium or some other stadiums. But that being said, it's going to get to that point where it is a huge advantage for the Raiders, probably as early as next as this coming up season. But you know, beyond that, when we talk about the stadium and you know, opening to full capacity and what it means, not just for the Raiders but this local economy, it's a big deal. It really is a big deal. You know, Nevada wanted to be a part of this for various reasons. You know, getting the NFL to a city like Las Vegas is a game changer. It basically announces Las Vegas as a big-time sports town. And it always has been in its own little way. Obviously, gambling is a huge part of that. People come here to watch games and bet on them. And so sports has always been – there's an intensity for sports here that's real and prevalent. And now but it was isolated to – you know, the gambling aspect of it. But now to have the Raiders here as the local team, the local NFL team, it's just a real game changer. But what that stadium is also going to mean in terms of the economy and jobs, and, you know, when you start talking about people wanting to stay at the, you know, coming in for a weekend and, you know, staying at the local hotels and eating at the local restaurants and drinking at the local bars and gambling and doing all of that thing. It's a economic driver, and that's why Nevada was so open to making this deal work, and they did it in a very clever and shrewd and intelligent way. For those of you who don't know the dynamics of this deal, you know, you pick up a newspaper or read a story online and you see $700 million in local money, state money, going into this project, and I know that the initial reaction is always to, you know, blow a gasket. Well, if you look at the way it worked, the dynamics of the deal, what Nevada did was they tapped into their defining resource of this state and of this city, and that's tourism, and they raised the tax on out-of-towners tax bill when they're staying at a hotel here in Las Vegas and Reno as well, and all throughout the state. I don't even remember what it was, but it's almost like too insignificant to even mention. A half a cent, maybe a cent, I don't know, that it raised each hotel bill. And of that money, that cent or half of a cent or whatever it is that it raised each hotel bill, that money was going to go toward the stadium and funding the stadium. So long story short, not to get into all the weeds of this, it essentially means that out-of-towners, tourists, are coming in and paying for the stadium. It's not coming out of the local pocketbooks. If you come and travel to Las Vegas, or Reno, and you stay at one of the hotels, you're paying for this, essentially. And so it really is a brilliant idea. And so now, you know, when the state did what it did to become a partner in this venture, they did it not just with the Raiders in mind, although that's the driving force of all this, and the NFL being here, of course. It's just it changes the image of Las Vegas. It's a game changer, period. But what it also means for the concerts and the Super Bowls that are coming and the Final Fours that are coming, the big shows, the WrestleMania, I would imagine, you know, there's going to be big college, I'll just say this, there's going to be big college football games being played in that game, whether you're talking about a regular season game of prestigious teams involved. Just count on that. I can say that right now. I know some of the things that are, you know, in the works. It's not official yet, so I'm not going to, you know, jump out ahead of it. But there's going to be premier college football games being played in that stadium. And that's not to mention things like the Pac-12 championship game and the national championship game. There's going to be a bowl game here now that's played here each year. And it's you know, I mentioned the Pac-12 championship game. Historically, that's been played most recently up in the Bay Area at Stanford, and then they put it at I covered it when it was at Stanford a couple times when UCLA was playing up there, I think USC, but then also they put it in Santa Clara as well. And you know what? Nothing against the stadium up in Santa Clara. Nothing against it. Okay, it's not my favorite whatsoever. In fact, it's pretty way down there as far as these new stadiums that have cropped up. The location is just, it's not in San Francisco by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, it's kind of quite a ways from San Francisco. It just doesn't have that kind of Bay Area feel. I know to the traditionalists up in the Bay Area, you've responded on Twitter many times when I've said that. It is the Bay Area. I know it's the Bay Area. But you know what? You know, Irwindale is part of Los Angeles County, and it's technically part of SoCal and Los Angeles, and it's not really. We all know that. So it's not the traditional Bay Area that we think with the water and all that beauty and everything like that. But anyway, the other part of that is for some reason, nobody ever really wanted to go watch the Pac-12 championship game up in Santa Clara. It was kind of laughable and almost embarrassing watching the game up there. And I covered enough of them to know that I think they would play those games on a Friday night, 5 o'clock start, 6 o'clock start in the middle of traffic on a Friday night. Sometimes the teams would be everywhere but the Bay Area. It was boring, to be honest with you. It was boring. The stadium was kind of boring. And nobody went. So there you go. Well, you put that game now, the Pac-12 championship game here in Las Vegas. If you're Arizona State, if you're Oregon, if you're Washington, you know, and you have your choice between, you know, traveling to San Jose to go watch the Pac-12 championship game or Las Vegas, what do you think you're going to pick? I'll say this about Las Vegas, they make it pretty reasonable to get out here too. It's in a very good location for all of the Pac-12 schools to get to. It's a very short flight from everywhere that the Pac-12 is, right? Generally speaking, depending on how you got it or don't have it with the money, you'll be able to get here at a reasonable cost, and you'll be able to stay here at a reasonable cost. And it has everything for everybody. Whatever your pocketbook and bank account looks like, and whatever you're willing to spend or can spend, you're going to be able to find accommodations that fit your style here in Las Vegas. And so and you have every – yeah, you're in the epicenter of fun. So something like the Pac – just even like that, the Pac-12 championship game, I think, is going to look incredibly different from now on, or the years that it's in, at Allegiant Stadium. And I think the same can be said in Los Angeles. I think it's going to be a nice deal there if and when it gets to SoFi Stadium. But then on the WrestleMania, the concerts, the Final Fours, the Super Bowl will be coming here. Can you imagine the Super Bowl in Las Vegas? And I'm looking forward to it being in Los Angeles next year. I can't wait to check it out. I was fortunate enough to be somebody that wrote about and covered that whole thing of football coming back to Los Angeles, the NFL coming back to Los Angeles, and to see all the trials and tribulations and the roller coaster ride, and to be able to step foot into SoFi Stadium when the Super Bowl is there next year, and just to see the Super Bowl in Los Angeles. I've been to a Super Bowls in a lot of different places now. It always takes over the city. It's going to be interesting to see how it's laid out in Los Angeles. If you haven't been to Los Angeles, it's very spread out. So I can imagine that you're going to have things from the beach to downtown and Santa Monica, that area. I think the Super Bowl itself, the festivities are going to be fairly spread out in Los Angeles, and that's cool. That's just part of the Los Angeles story. But here in Las Vegas, can you imagine everything being centralized on the Strip in the various points of the Strip? There's a brand new convention center that's being that's you know that has been built. There's all the different hotels and casinos and vantage points and, you know, the Bellagio and the waterfall in the Bellagio. So I can imagine that they're going to tap into all that. So I can't wait. And it's going to be, if you're going to stay, if you're going to be coming here to the Super Bowl and staying on the Strip, you're probably going to be able to walk or, you know, or a very, very short ride to all the various points and attractions. So I can't wait. But that's what Allegiant Stadium means to this city now. It's a guarantee that you're going to have big time events. And, you know, with the calendar, with the weather here, yeah, it gets a little cold. Obviously, it gets hot, but hot heat can be managed. It gets a little bit, you know, cold. But this is the type of city where it's 24/7, 12 months out of the year. And you're going to be able to book that place throughout the course of the year and have some magical moments and magical events here at Allegiant Stadium. And now that, you know, it was supposed to already be happening. We were supposed to be talking in past tense about some great events that have already been there. And yes, you know, the Raiders season was memorable in a lot of ways, this being the first year last season in Las Vegas. So there was a historical element to it. But something was missing, man. I'm not going to lie. And that was the case everywhere you went in the NFL. When the Raiders played the Chargers at SoFi Stadium, and to me, that stadium is just unbelievable. If you get out to SoFi Stadium and check that place out, it's bar none. It's tremendous. I do say that my belief anyway is that Allegiant Stadium, there's some reasons why maybe SoFi Stadium might be like inside, maybe a little bit grander, a little bit better, nicer, if you want to say. And I only mean it because there's differences to the stadiums. It's a bigger stadium, SoFi Stadium. There's things about that stadium that's just, it's been taken to another level. But Allegiant Stadium, on the other hand, what I love about Allegiant Stadium beyond everything else, and it's immaculate in that place and beautiful. It's raidered out. It's silver and black in there. You can tell that it's, the acoustics are going to be tremendous. It's a great home for the Raiders and one of the great new stadiums, or just great stadiums, period, in not just in America, but the world. It is fantastic. You're going to love Allegiant Stadium. But the thing that really, to me, sets it apart from even SoFi Stadium is the location. SoFi Stadium, I'm basically grew up in Southern California. So going to Inglewood, where the Lakers played for so many years at the Forum, I am well-versed in getting to Inglewood, okay, as many people in Los Angeles are. But the thing about where the Forum is still stands, by the way, and where SoFi Stadium is, and the Clippers are going to have their stadium as well, as opposed to other stadiums around the world, and here in Las Vegas with Allegiant Stadium, you have to like drive to it to even know that it's there. Like you have to make it a point to get to a certain place of Los Angeles, Inglewood, California, to be able to see it. Here in Las Vegas, you just have to be on the 15 freeway coming into Las Vegas or leaving Las Vegas or driving in and around Las Vegas or where, I mean, you know, I could see it. Like when I leave my house and start coming down a certain hill, I could see it. I could see Allegiant Stadium from so many different vantage points here in Las Vegas, whether you're talking about Henderson, whether you're talking about on the other side in Summerlin. Heck, you can see it if you go to the Raiders practice facility. I think it's on the second floor or maybe the third floor. I haven't gotten up to the high end of the offices yet, so we'll see if I ever make my way up to there. But there's vantage points where you can see the stadium from offices at the facility in Henderson. SoFi Stadium, you don't see it from any freeway. You have to drive to see it. You have to drive to get there. If you didn't know it was there, you would never know that it was there. That's different in Allegiant Stadium. And many stadiums, too, where you're just driving around on the main freeway or the main thoroughfare in whatever city you're in, you're going to see that stadium. And it just kind of puts it all in perspective. And it's like becomes the anchor of that city. And that's what I think that Allegiant Stadium, the edge that Allegiant Stadium has over SoFi, you can't miss it. And you know, just looking at it, that's the Raiders Stadium right there, because it's sleek and black and silver and beautiful, and you can see it from everywhere. You're in the huddle with Vinny Monsignor, brought to you by Tequila and Vodka.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
My focus right now is just come in and do my best and whatever is asked of me to help the team win. Obviously, Coach Gruden and Mike Mayock been building a real good team. And I've been paying close attention to that while the year I was gone. All the pieces are there. I think we're ready to win. And so whatever I'm going to need to do to help us win, that's what I'm going to do.
That is the voice of new Raiders safety Carl Joseph, speaking on Friday from the Raiders practice facility in Henderson after signing his new contract with the Raiders, returning after a year away. Carl played with the Cleveland Browns last year. He played his first 4 years with the Raiders. Was the 14th pick overall in the 2016 draft out of West Virginia. And, you know, if you look at what Carl Joseph did during his 4 years with the Raiders, it was pretty good work, to be honest with you. You know, by the end of that fourth year, it a lot of it came down to just injuries. You know, he wasn't able to stay on the field for a full 16 games in any of his years with the Raiders. And by the year four in 2019, his season was cut down to 9 games. So, you know, that went into him not returning just as much as anything else. And in fact, you know, I know Coach John Gruden and the staff really felt he was coming along in 2019 before the injuries and all that. So, there's a level of confidence in Carl Joseph. He had said, I think it was earlier in that clip, you know, what he expected his role to be. If he had talked to Gus Bradley about the role of new defensive coordinator Gus Bradley, and one of the things that he mentioned was, hey, you know, roles change, and I think that was significant in what he said. Roles change, and kind of leads me to believe that they've been upfront with him, with the Raiders, that is, as far as, you know, you left a starter, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a starter upon your return. Obviously, Jonathan Abram is the strong safety right now, and he'll have every opportunity to solidify himself in that role going into his third year, really his second full season with the Raiders. He missed so much time as a rookie, pretty much the whole season except for one half of the season opener to injuries. So, you know, Jonathan Abram got his feet wet last year. It was a weird season for him in a lot of different ways. He wasn't always the best player out there. There were mistakes along the way. There were hiccups. There were some good plays that he made without question. But there's a lot of growth that still needs to happen. And in Jonathan Abram's defense, COVID-19 wreaked some havoc with Jonathan last year. Not so much in him getting it, but, you know, having to miss time out of protocols, contact tracing. There was a week where he went where he couldn't even be in the facility to be with his teammates and practicing, had to practice from home or just do what he could at home. And then, oh, by the way, you're cleared to go play on Sunday. It was just very, very weird. So not conducive to a guy that's trying to figure it out at this level. Well, hopefully all of that's behind him. And all of us, for that matter, with the effect that COVID-19 is having. And he could go through a regular year and a regular practice schedule and be there day in and day out. And I think that that's, you know, going to help Jonathan Abram. But, you know, if he's not up to the challenge, you've got Carl Joseph as an insurance policy. I think that he brings that, Carl Joseph does. I think he brings some insurance in case the Raiders either A, can't get the guy that they want in the draft to play free safety, or B, that player isn't ready to go day one. or C, if there's another free agent option in free agency that they're not able to get whoever it is they may have their eye on in that regard. Essentially saying that the signing of Carl Joseph doesn't preclude the Raiders from drafting somebody. I think that they're going to, a traditional kind of a free safety. And I think Carl Joseph is going to be somebody that sort of floats around, and you can utilize him in various different ways. We've talked about this before. There's a lot of sets now, a lot of formations now defensively where teams are playing three safeties, and Carl Joseph is going to get on the field a lot in that regard. Maybe he comes in, maybe he wins the starting free safety job. Who knows? Maybe he takes Jonathan Abrams' job. You know, that remains to be seen. So there's a bunch of different ways, you know, that the Raiders are going to be able to tap into Carl Joseph. But I wouldn't run away with the thought of, oh, they signed Carl Joseph, that means they're done at safety. I don't think that that's the case at all. I think that, you know, I believe, have their eye on somebody in the draft, whether it's in that second round or the third round. I think they're going to find their guy, their long-range safety, somewhere along the line of the draft at that point. And we'll see, come training camp, if that player is ready to lock down that job and win that job and be the player that the Raiders need at that position. But if they can't, well, you know, Carl Joseph has a history playing some free safety, quite a bit of it actually, throughout his career with the Raiders. And then last year with the Cleveland Browns, we mentioned this earlier, his one interception last year came playing that position. If you want to Google it, there's video of it. And, you know, once you get past just, man, Dwayne Haskins, I don't know exactly what he was looking at. That was like literally the one route that you didn't try to throw to out of that route tree, and what the Washington Football Club was trying to do, especially based on what the defensive formation was and who ran where. There were some clear options to go to, and that was the least option. The least favorable option was the throw that he tried to make. And, you know, Carl Joseph, being a savvy veteran, completely saw the mistake and made Dwayne Haskins pay for it. But anyway, that was his one interception last year, and it came at free safety. And we all know the Raiders, as of right now, technically don't have a starter at free safety or a declared starter. You could go through the defense and pretty much say who's the starter right now, right? Jonathan Abrams is a starting strong safety. Corey Littleton, Nick Kwiatkowski, Nicholas Morrow are the starting linebackers. I'm thinking that it's going to be Yannick Ngakoue, you know, either Jonathan Hankins or Maurice Hurst, either Quentin Jefferson or Jonathan Hankins or Mo Hurst. One of those three will be your starting defense, or two of those three will be your starting defensive tackles, and Cleve Farrell will be the other starting defensive end. Sometimes Cleve Farrell will get moved inside. I think you're going to see Max Crosby come in a lot on passing situations, which there's a lot of those in the NFL, so he's going to get his snaps. But that's essentially your starting, or in the starting cornerbacks, Damon Arnett. One of the other starting cornerbacks is obviously Trayvon Mullen, and depending on what the coverage look is, you've got a slot cornerback. Right now, Amik Robertson would be in line to win that job. Maybe the Raiders go out and sign another cornerback. Maybe they move around some players. But that's essentially what it is. The most glaring hole right now, well, there's two really on defense, because don't know if Amik Robertson is ready to assume that role, and just don't know who the starting free safety is going to be. Jeff Heath is there in reserve. I think Carl Joseph is there in reserve. If you have to do it, one of those two can be the starters at free safety, but I don't think that's what the Raiders are planning on doing. I think they go out and get another safety. So, you know, it was a good move by the Raiders. You know, obviously Carl Joseph wants to be here. He expressed that he feels like, hey, you know, I'm not going to come back just for any team. I did my homework. I watched this team from afar. You would expect that he would. Being that he had just played four seasons with the Raiders, of course you're going to keep your eye on your old team. He liked what he saw, and he understands what's in that locker room. He saw a bunch of those guys during his time with the Raiders, especially that last year with the Raiders, and some of these young pups like Clee Farrell and Max Crosby and Trayvon Mullen and Jonathan Abram and Nicholas Morrow, you know, and Jonathan Hankins and Maurice Hurst. So he knows what's in that, what's possible, what's the potential of this defense, and he knows now that, you know, there's a capable defensive coordinator in Gus Bradley. He wants to be a part of this. He knows, you know, what kind of quarterback Derek Carr is, now the weapons that he has around him. You know, I think Carl Joseph had choices to make in where he was going to land. I think he took a visit to the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, you know, that's a team that's perennially challenging for a playoff spot. He chose to come back to come back to the Raiders, not necessarily back to Las Vegas. His years were in Oakland, but he came back to the Raiders, and I think that, you know, that's not insignificant. At this stage of his career, you figure if the money is relatively the same, you're going to go where you feel like you can win. What, you know, the organization, the team, the players, the teammates, the infrastructure that's in place that gives you the best chance to win. And I think Carl Joseph deciding, like, hey, you know what? The money's relatively the same between here and there, and, you know, whatever other teams were involved. I kind of like my chances going to the Raiders to win. And I think he knows and understands, based on, you know, what he told us when he was on our show on Friday, what he also said on the Zoom calls. I don't think there's any promises of, you know, a starting job. He's going to come in here and compete for a role, and you know, and so he comes with eyes wide open as far as that goes. But just the fact that he wants to be here, wants to be a part of something that he thinks is close to turning that corner. I think bodes well for the Raiders. Will they turn the corner? I think they're going to be in position this year to do just that, and it's predicated, obviously, on guys just naturally progressing. You know, your Clee Farrells, your Max Crosbys, your Corey Littleton, you know, getting his legs under him after a year here with the Raiders, and now just playing more comfortably in a system that maybe suits him best. Guys like Damon Arnette being better, guys like Trayvon Mullen being better, guys like Jonathan Abram being better. I know that those are ifs. At this point, those are ifs. But you know, you could go to any number of teams and say, well, if this happens, if that happens, you know, there's no guarantees that guys are going to be, you know, good from one year to the next. We've seen guys fall off the cliff sometimes. Heck, Corey Littleton, you know, he was as certain a certainty as there was going into last year, and it didn't happen. It didn't work out. And you can blame, you know, the system. You can blame his unfamiliarity with the system. You can blame the fact that there wasn't any OTAs and minicamp, and training camp was, you know, it was a shell of what it normally is. You can blame all of those things, the coaching staff, how he was used. But the fact is, what we thought was a certainty turned out to be anything but. So a lot of teams from year to year go into that under the same kind of circumstances. You don't know if guys are going to continue to play at a high level, or if there's going to be a dip, or if there's going to be a hitch in the road, or whatever the case might be. So when we talk about the Raiders and we talk about, okay, this guy needs to progress and that sort of thing, and there's a bunch of guys that do need to do that, it's not abnormal. It's not unusual. This is just a young team that has been a work in progress, that is still putting it together, and they need guys to step up and be who the Raiders thought they were going to be whether it was signing them as a free agent or drafting them in the first or second round. Guys need to become the players that the Raiders envision. Now, part of that is obviously on the players themselves. A lot of it is on the system that they're playing in, the coaching that they're getting, how they're being utilized, all of those things. For whatever reason, we just haven't been able to see this defense be connected in that way. And when I say connected, I mean from the messaging up top to the assistant coaches, to the players, to how this team functions as a unit, as a group, as a team. It just always has seemed these last couple of years Like that's the one side of the ball where it's just been disconnected. The talent is there. There's talent to work with on this Raiders defense, but they just haven't been able to. It hasn't been able to come together in the collective sense, and that's what needs to happen, and that's on Gus Bradley, and it's on those players to get connected. And there's no excuses for it not to be the case this year, especially if there's a regular offseason. None whatsoever. It's time. It's time for that defense to get its act together. You're in the huddle with Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador.
Interact with the show. Text Vinny at 69187 or tweet at him at Vinny Bonsignor. This is In the Huddle with Raiders beat writer Vinny Bonsignor on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Welcome back. You're in the huddle, Vinny Bonsignor, brought to you by Tequila Embajador. Thanks for joining us on a beautiful Monday. And, you know, like we were talking about earlier, things are headed in the right direction, and I honestly can't wait to see what Allegiant Stadium is going to look like when that thing opens up 100% capacity. It looks like we're headed there, and you know, Bill Hornbuckle, the CEO of MGM Grand, or MGM Resorts, I should say, owns MGM Grand, obviously, and Mark Bedain, the Raiders president, talking in very hopeful terms on Saturday about, you know, working with the governor, working with the state of Nevada, paying attention to the science, you know, going by the numbers and just doing the right thing. But if it's it is trending in the right direction, and if it continues to trend in that direction, there's a very good chance come football season, Allegiant Stadium is going to be open to 100% capacity. And you know, it's important because if you remember last year, Raiders owner Mark Davis, you know, basically made a stand and stood in solidarity with his fans and said, look, if because remember this time last year or so, as we were moving closer to the NFL season, it was pretty obvious that, you know, there was no way there was going to be full capacity at Allegiant Stadium. There was a hope, you know, from state officials that maybe, you know, you could get 20%, you know, 10% fans in there. But Mark Davis said, listen, if it's not going to be 100%, I don't want to do it. I don't want to tell one of my season ticket holders they can't come to a game this year, let alone the thousands that he would have had to tell. I want to wait until this thing is open without restrictions and 100% of Raider Nation can be at the stadium until we open it at all. And, you know, he stood in solidarity with his fans by not attending any home games last year. The only time I saw Mark Davis last year was on the road. When it came to Allegiant Stadium, he said, if my fans can't be there, if Raider Nation can't be there, I'm not going to be there as well. And this is Mark Bedain, the Raiders president, talking about the stand that Mark Davis took last year that he hopefully doesn't have to take again this year.
Well, Mark was in solidarity with the fans, and he said, if they can't be in my stadium, I'm not going to be there. So he didn't see any games in the stadium last year, and I think that says a lot about who he is. And you can tell Raider Nation's ready to explode and to get into that stadium. They reach out to us all the time. They're very excited about this upcoming season, and I think they're going to be really proud of the building once they're inside it.
Yeah, and again, that's Mark Bedain, the Raiders CEO and president, talking about you know, his boss, Mark Davis, deciding and opting against going to games last year at Allegiant Stadium. Wasn't because he didn't want to be there. He just felt like, look, you know, he's obviously the owner of the Raiders, but he's also, you know, the head of Raider Nation, to be honest with you. There's nobody that cares more than Mark Davis, I can assure you of that. And he takes that responsibility very, very seriously, and he understands that he's essentially a caretaker for a legion of fans, a nation, for crying out loud, of Raider fans. And he understood, what he really understood was, in addition to all that, you know, for a season ticket holder, and we've talked about this before, you're not just, when a new stadium opens up, you're not, and you buy season tickets to it, you're not just paying for the actual seats. You're also paying what they call a personal seat license, a PSL. And the misnomer is that it's just another way for owners to make money. But by league rule, that money that's generated from that quote-unquote tax on your season ticket holders, that season personal seat license, that PSL money, it actually goes to construction of the stadium. So what you're doing is you're building a stadium. A couple years from when it opens up, you start putting the tickets on sale, maybe even a little bit closer to the opening date. You start putting your season tickets on sale. Each ticket, wherever you're sitting, has a price, but then there's also a PSL attached. That payment, that PSL, allows you to keep control of that seat throughout the duration of the lease. And I want to say that the Raiders lease with Allegiant Stadium is 30 years. So if you bought a PSL and season tickets, you have the right to that ticket for the next 30 years. And so nobody can come in and swoop in and say, I'm going to offer, X amount of dollars to the Raiders for that ticket. Nope. The PSL owner essentially owns those seats. Now, of course, you have to re-up every year on the season ticket side of it, but you have access. That's your seat for the duration of the lease of the stadium. But more importantly, that money goes toward construction of the stadium. So everybody that bought a season ticket to Allegiant Stadium has a stake in that stadium. It's partly theirs. They helped build it. Money that they put toward their tickets literally went to construction of the stadium. And so Mark Davis said, look, we sold 65,000 season tickets here. That's 65,000 people that, have a role and a stake in this stadium being built. I'm not going to open it up to half of those fans put their hard-earned money toward construction of the stadium. I'm not going to open it to 20% of the fans. That's not fair. And so until it's 100%, then nobody's going, including myself, So he stayed away. Hopefully we don't deal with that again this year. It looks like things are starting to really trend in the right direction. Vaccinations are up. Numbers are down. Hopefully by July, the state will be able to start looking ahead to August when the season essentially starts with preseason and say, you know what? We're on a good path. We're going to open up all venues, including Allegiant Stadium, to 100% capacity. Now, there might be some stipulations with masks and all that type of deal, but we'll see. We'll cross that bridge when we get there. There's a good chance that come the fall, Allegiant Stadium is going to be open to 100% of the fans, and I can't wait for that. You're in the huddle. Vinny Bonsignor brought to you by Tequila Embajador. We'll be back at it tomorrow, 4 to 6 p.m. Thanks to the callers. Thanks to Sam Gordon. Thanks to DeMond Cotton doing everything he does as our great producer. We will talk to you guys tomorrow.